This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandu. On the 26th and the 27th of August, Kuala Lumpur will play host to PyCon Asia 2017. It's a conference by the Python community for Python members and anyone who is keen to learn the beauty of the Python language and how it could change the world. I recently got on the phone with two of the keynote speakers for the event, Jessica McKellar and Luis Sanchez. First up, let's talk to Jessica McKellar.
Hello, Jessica.
Hi, this is Jeff from BFM.
Hi there.
Hi, Jessica. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Jessica McKellar is a startup founder, a software engineer, and an open source developer living in San Francisco, California. Be the change you wish to see in the world. It's a tagline that's found on your website, Jessica. So tell me about the story and how did you discover the love for Python language?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, I'm not one of those folks who started programming at birth. I actually thought I was going to be a chemist, and that was my first major in university. While I was pursuing that chemistry degree, I had a bunch of friends who were learning how to, who were pursuing computer science degrees and were learning how to program in Python at school. And, I was sort of watching them out of the corner of my eye, and I could see them learning what seemed like a really useful general toolkit for solving a broad range of problems in the world. And that felt very appealing to me. So I ended up taking a couple of classes, ended up sort of falling in love with computer science as a discipline, but also Python as a programming language. And in some ways, the rest is history. So I ended up getting a computer science degree and a master's degree. And I've sort of been a serial entrepreneur since school, had two startups and acquisitions. I'm currently on startup number three, where we use Python 3. So I've used Python sort of every job that I've ever had in every company that I've started. Why Python? Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. There are sort of technical reasons and there are community reasons. Technically, Python continues to be for me a great tool to get a variety of jobs done. It's my go-to when I want to solve a little one-off personal problem that I want to automate. I think it's a great language for solving a variety of business problems. So, I love Python the language because it's an efficient way to get work done. And then the community is also really important to me. I think that the Python community has done an amazing job of positioning itself as being very welcoming to beginners and people of diverse backgrounds and an international audience. And the community has put in a lot of effort to make itself welcoming and available. And I think that's very relevant actually for conferences like this. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, programming languages, their DNA can start in one part of the world, and really making sure that it becomes accessible to people around the world is really important to me. And a lot of the work that I did as a director for the Python Software Foundation was about this sort of community outreach, about Python in education, about empowering user groups and conferences around local conferences around the world to build community around the language.
What was the first project that you done using Python, or what was the most interesting project that you did with using Python? Whichever has the better story.
Sure. As far as stories go, maybe a story that's worth telling is, because it's a memory that has lasted for a long time with me, is the first time I ever contributed to an open source project, which was in Python. It was to Twisted, which is an asynchronous networking framework written in Python. And I was in school, I was in university when I was using this library to solve a variety of problems, and decided that I wanted to give back to start by making some documentation changes. And the reason why this memory sticks with me, I'm still in school. I'm sort of early in my programming career. I have heard that contributing to open source projects can be scary or intimidating, but I've decided that I want to do it, and I find a documentation bug that I want to fix. And, I have this very crisp memory in my head of, I remember reading through the Twisted, how to contribute a patch guidelines probably three times, just wanting to make sure that I didn't make any mistakes. And I remember opening an issue on the issue tracker and, wanting to get every single little detail right because I wanted to do a good job, and I wanted people to think that I knew what I was doing, and I didn't want anybody to yell at me. So I remember just agonizing over this what was really a very simple first documentation patch. I remember agonizing over it and being very nervous about how the development community would receive me. And I remember like my finger hovering over the submit button on the issue tracker, like, you know, having to will myself to press the button to see what would happen. And what was really great about this experience is, like, I pressed send, like, I pressed submit on the issue tracker. I, like, quickly get feedback, actually, from Glyph, who's the creator of the project. He's the one who, like, saw the patch and, like, gave me some feedback and walked me through the contribution process and ultimately merged this documentation patch. And what it was for me was this incredibly positive first open source contribution experience. Like, having been intimidated by it, having a very positive first experience really stuck with me for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, hopefully I was a good investment. Like, I ended up actually submitting many more patches to the project and eventually becoming a core maintainer for the project and ended up writing a book about Twisted with O'Reilly.
Wow.
So hopefully that was a good initial investment to make sure I had a good first experience. But also, like, not everyone has such a positive first experience, and, like, that made me become aware of and very invested in ensuring that, like, Python as a community, like, various, like, specific Python projects, we're thinking about this. Like, we're thinking about the beginner experience and thinking about the first-time contributor experience and really doing a good job there. Mm. So it was like, that was a really formative experience for me as a software engineer and as an open-source contributor.
And on your website, you know, I'm just viewing your website at the moment and I'm just scrolling down and I'm reading, you know, be the change you wish to see in the world. That's the motto that you put on your website, and it's clearly shown in your love for Python. Where did this hunger and desire of, you know, wanting to be the change and then finding that love for programming and how did Python and all sort of just, you know, helps you in that area? How did this hunger came about?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, let me answer that question with, this is maybe not exactly an answer, but I think it's relevant. You know, a thing that I have come to believe very firmly, so I've spent a lot of time building communities. I've spent a lot of time teaching beginners how to program in Python. Something that I've become convinced of through these experiences is that learning how to program really does something important to your brain. Mm. Like, it really does change the way that you think about and interact with the world. And if you think about it, like, what does it mean to learn how to program? Like, it means you become fluent in a language and you're able to use that fluency to solve a bunch of problems that you couldn't solve before. Like, using computers, it unlocks a way of engaging with and solving problems that you see in the world. And that experience is really powerful. Like, thinking, oh, I see that there's a problem and I can write some code to make it better, that is a very empowered mindset. And that in and of itself is already very empowering. But some folks are even then able to step back from that and say, wait, like, when I see a problem in the world, I have the power to change it. Like, the more that you have those experiences, it's very self-reinforcing, and, like, it sort of creates an activist mindset that I think is very powerful. And for a lot of people, it starts with programming. Like, for a lot of people, programming is like, your first experience, like, seeing something that you want to make better in the world and then causing it to be better through something that you do. So I think that mindset is incredibly powerful. And so for me, like, knowing how to program, teaching people how to program, like, an activist mindset, they're all very interrelated, and that's part of why I care so much about this and why I spend so much of my time on community and on beginners. Because, like, basically I want as many people in the world as possible to when they see a problem think, oh, I can fix it, be it a programming problem or some other problem, a social problem.
Has this been fueled by also the rise of, you know, social media stuff like Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, people are out there and complaining, and the more they complain, the more they realize that, you know, change ain't going to happen, and it kind of just helps you to, you know, build a larger community, and your community is mostly made up of, you know, youth, I presume?
Are we mostly youth? Are you asking about the Python community specifically, or
yeah,
about, you know, one of the beautiful things about open source is that it really brings together people from many different backgrounds and many sort of different places in their career. So some of the most talented people I know have been doing this for a very long time. So yeah, I don't actually know for all you.
I'm speaking to Jessica McKellen. In just a moment, I will be talking to her about her experience in teaching inmates at the St. Quentin State Prison, which has one of the highest number of death row for male inmates in the US. You don't want to miss this. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
And we're back with me, Jeff Sandu, and on the show today, we're talking to Jessica McKellar. She's a software engineer and an open source developer in San Francisco, who is also a keynote speaker at this year's PyCon APAC 2017. Jessica's work with the Python language community has been inspiring, but none more so than her work with the inmates at St. Quentin Prison. Jessica, tell me about this project with inmates and how did it all begin and, you know, giving them a chance to make a difference.
Yes, this has been, I mean, this has been incredibly, like, satisfying and educational experience for me. So there's a state prison near where I live called San Quentin State Prison. This is an interesting prison for a lot of reasons. It's a very old prison in the United States. It houses the largest death row in the Western Hemisphere. And it's a large prison with many hundreds of people serving life sentences or who have death sentences. And a lot of innovative programs have emerged in this prison. Two examples are, the first ever sort of programming curriculum inside of a prison in the United States was developed at San Quentin. And they also have some very interesting sort of journalism initiatives. So there's a Society of Professional Journalists that has journalists from around the world. And the first ever members of this society who were in prison started working at San Quentin. So in the same way that in our earlier conversation, like programming and activism end up being very tied together, in my mind, this is a really good example of that, which is, you know, there's this opportunity to help people learn a skill set that may be useful for employment once they're no longer incarcerated. It's an opportunity to engage with the prison system in the United States and really start to get a sense for what it is like and how it can be better. And then there's also actually the journalism components end up interacting with the programming component. So there are a lot of people who are in both programs, and there's this big push for people who are incarcerated to be able to have their own voice, like to be able to publish their own stories that the outside world can see, and that's really important for them having a voice, but then also developing some empathy for some of the challenges in the prison system currently in the United States. Mm. So, yeah, it's like there are folks who they need a job when they're going to get out. Programming is a pretty good job for a lot of different reasons. They're learning Python as well as some other languages, and it's a really interesting and I think good opportunity for people on the inside and people on the outside to learn from each other. And like we need. Honestly, we need more of that in the world, given where things are going in the U.S. with the prison system. Mm-hmm.
Was the whole process tough in terms of, you know, teaching inmates and trying to, you know, get them to understand something that they're, you know, possibly very unfamiliar at, you know, completely unfamiliar with the whole programming language and, you know, of solving things in a digital world?
Yeah, so there are two interesting challenges here. One is... like the infrastructure that is available to them is very limited. So there's no internet access is allowed. So like imagine learning how to program when you cannot use a search engine to look anything up. It's all books and PDFs in pretty locked down computing environments. So that's a pedagogical challenge when you're operating in this really restricted environment. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is, as with any beginner or as with any learner, you really need to contextualize the content in terms of the experiences of the people in the class, right? And, like, you need to make the content relevant to them. So that's a really interesting, like, education challenge as well. Like, if you had to design a curriculum for folks with this background instead of experiences, like, how would you make programming the most engaging and useful? And it's a different-looking curriculum, potentially, from, like, a bunch of kids in like, a suburban school somewhere in the U.S. Yeah, so those are two really interesting challenges here.
Hmm. And socially, was it tough for you dealing with, as you mentioned, that it houses inmates who are in there mostly for, you know, life imprisonment or death sentences? Was that a tough challenge that you had to go through as well?
Hmm. My reaction to that question is, there's just like a lot of humanity in like the day-to-day interactions that you have with folks. There's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of like sharing of personal experiences, and there's a lot of reflection on like your like background and circumstance and access and choices and like the ramifications of choices that people make in their lives and like what feels appropriate, inappropriate, fair, unfair. Yeah, I'd say it's a very stimulating environment to be in. Mm. Not an intimidating one, not a scary one, but one that definitely provokes a lot of thought about the systems in which we are all growing up and living. Just like a very stimulating environment. It's been very worthwhile for me.
And I'm sure, you know, being able to put in into, you know, making a decision and seeing it change in a digital world and, you know, helping out the community while building something, that satisfaction is something that you're able to provide them. It brings a new lease into life through programming language, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people who learn how to program find it really exciting and satisfying and stimulating. Like, yeah, you want to make something exist in the world, and you can do it with code, and that's really exciting. That's true whether or not you're an inmate.
Yeah, and you've been, you know, one of the most strongest advocate of, you know, women in code. What's been the driving factor here? Like, why are we even, you know, talking about, oh, it's a male dominated area when, you know, programming is something, you know, even down to Python is something that it's just universally available to everyone and is for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think this comes down to, in general, in the U.S. at least, there's been a lot of attention to the statistics around women in technology, women in software engineering, women in open source. You know, there are also, like, the statistics are very interesting for many other demographics. So the story is definitely not just about women in programming. Like, where I'm coming from, so I've spent a lot of energy with the Python Software Foundation, with various local user groups, like investing in ensuring that the community is welcoming to people of diverse backgrounds, providing opportunities for beginners of diverse backgrounds to get into programming. Like, why, you know, and some of these efforts have been focused on women, some of these efforts have been focused on other underrepresented groups, some of these efforts have been focused on everybody. Like, why do I care about these things? Why do I spend time on them? It goes back to sort of that previous thesis that, like, I want as many people as possible in the world to be able to program if they want to, because it is such an empowering mindset and experience to have. And so, you know, you spend time helping to rectify some of the imbalances in access that exist based on, you know, social norms and how society has evolved over the past couple of decades. But it's rooted in that desire for really everybody who wants to be able to learn how to program to be able to do so. You know, the statistics in schools in the United States are really interesting and are changing quickly, but we're really quite negative as recently as a couple of years ago. Like, most high school students in the United States do not have the opportunity to take a programming class in high school. And I think that sucks. Like, I think I want that to change. And this will change through a combination of, like, legislation and, like, access to programming for like, teacher training and, like, schools becoming more aware of the utility of these classes and parents becoming more aware of it. Like, all of these things are going to play in together. But part of what, like, the Python community is doing is, like, in some ways correcting for the fact that a lot of people don't have access to this stuff in school.
And it's a global problem as well. I don't think it's something that is just in America. I think, I'm very sure, you know, even in developing countries where you get, you know, the talent that is coming out from the local universities are struggling to keep up with the pace of the digital world, because a lot of businesses today rely on the digital world and are looking for talents, and they are outsourcing so many automation processes to companies outside of where they belong, and education plays a huge important role here.
Totally, yeah. I'm sort of most familiar with the U.S. statistics, but definitely a global problem.
Jessica, is English language a problem for, you know, programming, whether, you know, it's Python or, you know, Ruby on Rails and all those stuff?
Well, I think it's undeniably a bias in favor of folks who are comfortable learning in English, right? I mean, the language itself has keywords that are in English, and then a disproportionate amount of the documentation, like the tutorials and the videos and other means of learning the language are in English. Mm. So, I mean, hopefully it is decreasingly a roadblock. Like, you know, I think that a lot of really good effort has been put. I mean, I can mostly only speak for the Python community, but there's been a lot of effort, again, investing in local communities, translations of documentation, like empowering people, like local to various international communities to produce content that is really relevant to those communities locally. So, I mean, yes, there's definitely a bias rooted in the history of the language towards English, but I think it's a really really important area of focus for the Python Software Foundation to really improve the access, improve the internationalization, improve the representation, actually. So making sure that the people in the Python Software Foundation who are able to rally resources and support and money, like that there's good international representation for that as well.
Mm. Jessica, it's been really fascinating hearing your story. And just very quickly, what can we expect when you come down for PyCon APAC 2017?
I mean, it's going to be a really fun conference. People should definitely come check it out for the technical stuff, but also for the non-technical stuff. It's just a really good community and a good group of people. Everyone is going to learn something. I'm really excited to learn from the local community. Yeah, it's just, you know, I've done a lot of these at this point. Like, I've been to local PyCons around the world, and they're all different, and they're all fascinating, and the people are great everywhere. So I'm just, like, I'm excited to get to do this with this set of people.
That was Jessica McKellar, one of the two keynote speakers at PyCon APAC 2017. And in just a moment, we will be talking to Luis Sanchez, another keynote speaker for the Regional Python Language Conference, as he will be sharing about his Python language adventures so far. Luis made a name for himself when he was a quantitative analyst, or better known as a quant. And in 2008, his stint as a quant ended with the Lehman Brothers, where he was the senior vice president. We'll be right back and we'll talk to Luis about that epic collapse of the Lehman Brothers. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.